And so when she was in the hospital for about 6 months, I was up in the hospital all the time with her, just trying to do what I could as a 13-year-old. And, you know, we had watched every movie. There was like a wall full of movies, and we'd watch every single one of them. And not a single one of those movies had a single person with a disability character in them. And it dawned on me, like, right then and there, I can remember, like, looking up and, like, thinking about that, like, huh, like, that's, like, 14 years old, like, that's really weird. And so I reached out to Disney directors. I wrote a letter to them, and I asked them if they would make a Disney princess with a disability. And so I didn't hear back from them. And so 4 years later, I kind of took matters into my own hands. And
right into it. So Trinity, oh my gosh, how do you pronounce your last name?
Jagdeo.
Jagdeo. Okay. I could have attempted, but I'm happy I didn't. But Trinity Jagdeo, welcome to Chapter 20 Something. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes. Good. I'm so happy to have you. You are, okay, 22?
Yes.
22. A 5-time published author, organizer of a non-profit organization, running the thing, doing your thing. And it's incredible. And you're using your power in the world to do real good. So first of all, props to you for that. That's truly incredible. And to do that at such a young age is something that you just don't see every day. So I'm happy that we get to speak to somebody who is.
Thank you so much. It's definitely a blessing for sure. And like you said, being so young, it, you know, it has its highs and lows, but, you know, nonetheless, it's just been an incredible journey all throughout.
Yeah. And I guess first and foremost, do you think there's really something that started within you from when you were a young girl, just thinking like, I know I'm going to do something big in this world? Like, what do you think if when you hear that sentence? Because obviously it takes a lot of inner strength and confidence to go after something like this from the young age that you are.
Yeah, so definitely I think that a lot of people like early on noticed that even at such like before my teens, even I was very outspoken, very opinionated, just kind of never took no for an answer. And I think, you know, my mom's side, that was hard, but it really showed some tenacity and some a lot of my personality. And so I kind of always grew up knowing that I wanted to do something big. I never knew what it was going to be. But even at a young age, I kind of had this mindset that it wasn't just like something typical that I wanted to do. I wanted to do something. If you would have heard my goals when I was younger, you'd be like, what? Like, one that kind of just comes to the top of my head is that I wanted to be a veterinarian, but I just didn't want to be a vet. I wanted to be a vet that owned a bunch of vets around the United States. So it was always one thing, but it was always an elaborated thing. So I did always have this feeling like, you know, I wanted to have like a really grand scheme all together. And I think, you know, throughout my life, there was a lot of people that commented and said that they saw that in me. So definitely saw it.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's really amazing. And you could have it from people around you, you know, they could tell you that you're destined for greatness or whatever, but like, yes, that's so important. But then it really takes you making the actions and pushing forward to make a difference, really.
Yeah.
So what I love about you and your work is that you are an author of children's, all children's books, yes, but they all center on a different character with a different disability, a different challenge in the world that we don't see every day in our media, which we will get into the conversation of representation in the media. And, you know, we could literally have a whole podcast series about that. But we'll focus on this chapter today. But I want to know how you initially got into that realm, even because it's not something that you hear again commonly.
Yeah. So when I first started out like creating these books, I actually thought that I was going to create like video, not yeah, like video character representation, like try to make like a mini TV series almost. And the goal was to make almost like princes and princesses with disabilities. And so as I was drawing them out, like for some reason, drawing princesses didn't really sit with me. Like I love the idea of it, but for me, it was like, for some reason, superheroes stuck to me more. And it was still, there's still no Disney princess or prince with a disability, but there was not really any superheroes with the same thing. So I knew I was still tackling that same realm of underrepresentation. And so as I was getting into it, my first character that I thought of was almost my first, like, I guess, interaction other than my best friend who has spinal muscular atrophy, which I know we'll talk about more, but kind of my first memory really of a person with a disability who had Down syndrome. And so she had such an effect on me, and making her my friend had such an effect on me that I wanted to create a character based on her. And so from there, it kind of spun off into, okay, I want to continue to have this authentic representation. So we started picking kids with real disabilities to have that real authentic representation, because we see now in the media, like you said, there's a lot of hired actors that aren't actually disabled. But when you can go out and find disabled people to be actors, which is incredibly crazy. So instead of kind of like making this idea up in my head of just having random characters, I based it off of what I knew and who I knew. And like I said, just having that authenticity was really how I got the idea of using real people.
And I really like that aspect of it, because especially coming from you, like obviously your heart and your soul is in the right place, but you are an able-bodied person. You are healthy. You are young. Right. So you want to make sure that you are getting the real inspiration from the source, I guess. And the facts too of what it's really like to live with something like this. Absolutely. And then that's how you are going to help other kids who have the same disease or disability, have them see themselves in these characters. So that's really, really special and interesting and thoughtful too, that you're like, all right, we're going to base these off real people and their stories, their incredible stories.
Yes. So yeah, literally that's just how it kind of just spun off into that idea, and just making sure, because like I said, what we saw wasn't what we're still fighting for, that real representation. And so I wanted to make sure that I always think of myself as, I'm not some hero among the disability community. I seek to amplify their voice. I know that I have a voice and I have the power and I have the platform to amplify these voices. So why not pass the microphone and give those opportunities to that disability community? So that's really how I see, because like I said, you know, I could create these characters kind of just like in my mind if I wanted to, and you know, directors and publicists, and they do all those things, but get it right from the source.
Sure, absolutely. And I'm looking up something right now because I don't want to get this wrong, but my friend who I've had on this podcast, actually, she is a sensitivity reader. That is the correct name. Okay. So she has her own disability, but she lives with these experiences. Mm-hmm. She's so into her literature and her writing. Her name's Madison Baroda, and she wanted to make this her life as well, as making sure that these characters are appropriately represented in books. And that's what she does. And, you know, not everybody is doing what you're doing, where it's going to the source. They're just probably doing some research, I would hope and assume, but not to the level that, you know, you're going to the actual person who has it. So she makes sure that they're portrayed accurately and hopefully well represented light. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to her, but we're all for accurate representation and having the representation itself of these people. So
yes,
I wanted to get into your friend and how you experienced the need for this in the first place. So her name is Alexis, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about Alexis and your friendship with her.
Oh gosh. I love talking about her. She is, you know, like I said, my best friend, and I met her in kindergarten and we've been friends for 17 years. We are 2 months apart. So we're both 22 years old. And we really started being friends because there was a time when, I don't know, I guess it just so happened to be a special day, because usually classes are kind of broken up when they go to recess. But for whatever reason, our classes were put together, and there was one recess where I saw how she was playing hopscotch, just like the rest of the kids. Like, she didn't really kind of sit back and let the other kids play hopscotch on themselves because she didn't think that she could do it. She was like, I'm going to play hopscotch because I want to play hopscotch. And to me, it kind of just normalized my sense of what disability meant. And instead of something like this exclusive, like, you know, they have their own thing, we have our own thing as able-bodied versus disabled, it made her a lot more approachable for me. And I'm pretty sure I just went up to her and was like, you want to be friends? And yeah. So ever since then, we've been seriously inseparable, scary inseparable. And as I was growing up with her and in classes and just learning from her mom, just some of the things that the disability community goes through, it was eye-opening. And I was always in disbelief of the things that I would experience and hear. Like even like simple things while we were in school, she would have to miss out on recess sometimes to go to therapy. And to me, that's exclusion. Like, I feel like there's different times for her to be able to do that. If her playtime and relax time is during the same time as other peers, why couldn't we make that work? And right. So oftentimes she would have to sit out, and I would see her sit out during gym class because they weren't really inclusive, and just a lot of things that I would remember, like even with the notes, like I'm just remembering stuff even now, just thinking about a lot of the exclusion that I didn't even realize before, like note-taking in class, like there wasn't really like ample enough time for her to take down notes or an alternative for her. Her mom oftentimes would have to write down the notes for her because she was her aide in her class. So, you know, just those like, in a sense, minor experiences of being in elementary school, they eventually transferred over to, you know, me being a teenager and her being a teenager and me realizing more and more and more. And I, like I said, ever since I was a kid, I was never a kind of child that kind of stayed quiet. Like, I always wanted to speak up and stand up for what I believed in. And so over time, I realized that the representation in the disability media, I'm sorry, in the media in general was missing. And so when she was in the hospital for about 6 months, I was up in the hospital all the time with her, just trying to do what I could as a 13-year-old. And, you know, we had watched every movie. There was like a wall full of movies, and we'd watch every single one of them. And not a single one of those movies had a single person with a disability character in them. And it dawned on me, like, right then and there, I can remember, like, looking up and, like, thinking about that, like, huh, like, that's, like, 14 years old, like, that's really weird. And so I reached out to Disney directors. I wrote a letter to them, and I asked them if they would make a Disney princess with a disability. And so I didn't hear back from them. And so 4 years later, I kind of took matters into my own hands and started the nonprofit. But it was really her and growing up and seeing the misrepresentation, the underrepresentation, the funding sources that they don't, that aren't available to them, the discrimination, just so many things that I could go on and on about. And I just knew that if I had the opportunity to speak up and do something, why not take it? That's how it all started, because of her.
Yeah, that's truly, truly beautiful. And like, so special of you too, to even, you know how beautiful your friendship is from both sides, and also just to know, okay, I can make a difference in this person's life that I love. Exactly. And that's amazing. And, you know, I think not everyone can relate directly to your experience, but what something that I think everyone can relate to is, one, feeling like they're the other, or feeling like there's a group that's other than them. Like how you explained when you first met Alexis and you saw her playing on the playground, and when you went up and just started hanging out with her, that's when you realized, oh, she's no different than me. And first of all, that's just a lesson in itself that I think we need every day in this world, everywhere we turn, just to talk to people. And I feel like I've said this time and time again, but like, you can relate to people on so many different levels, rather than something that's physical or, you know, your economic class, whatever, like list goes on and on, clearly, but we can relate on a human level. And to be able to look at somebody like that, no matter what they look like, how they're different than you, that is something that we all need to do. So I love that you said that from the beginning.
Thank you.
And and then secondly, I think everyone can relate to just feeling different and feeling like they're not being stood up for, no matter what it is. And, you know, we all have experiences that are more extreme than others or whatever, but everybody knows that feeling and everybody knows that helplessness. And I think one, if we can look at other people with compassion,
yes,
to say, all right, how can I help this person so they don't feel that way? And two, if you are able to make a difference, why wouldn't you, you know? Yeah. What like great lessons just from that little 5-minute story that you told, but they're life lessons that we can take absolutely everywhere. So,
yeah.
And then, so you took matters into your own hands, like you said, and what came first? Was it your first book or was it starting the organization? How did it all play out?
Yes. Yeah, so like what I remember first was coming up with the name. Like that was like the big thing, because the whole idea was, okay, we're going to create these books, but we're also going to have an organization or a business that gives back. So I did like some sort of research. I can't remember like what it was, but I was like, okay, eventually I branded it so that it was, okay, we're going to make these books and a portion of the proceeds goes back to a family in need. And so amazing. When I saw that perspective and that idea, I was like, okay, this is a nonprofit and less a business. And so that's kind of how like the idea of the organization came together. And so when I came up with the name, the idea, because it was all one thing. I wanted to make sure it was all one thing, from the logo to the name to what we were doing. And so from We Can't to We Can is really a transformation and a call of action, because we're not saying that we don't know that we can't. We're trying to change society's minds from thinking that we can't, but we can. So it's really a transformation of society's minds, because if society thinks that they're not capable of certain things or not deserving of certain things, then we have an inaccessible society. And so, like I said, the transformation of wanting to change people's minds of what they thought about the disability community was exactly what we wanted to portray. And that's what we do with our superheroes. That's what we do with our events. Our superheroes, our events are showing that we are capable, what we are capable of. And we're trying to change that mindset of people thinking that they can't. And so the name came, and then the logo came shortly after. But I think our business license within New Jersey, we got a business license first, and then because I was still learning. I was 17 at the time, so I was still trying to figure out what nonprofit meant, the criteria behind it, and all the logistics, which is a lot. And so I knew that I wanted to start something. So my motto is, you know, just start somewhere. Just start with what you have. And at 17, I didn't even have my first job yet. So I knew that I could start with getting a business license. And I believe I waited until I got a job, because I remember going from paycheck to paycheck to just spending all my money on creating this business and this nonprofit. So, or maybe I had birthday money left over. I'm not really sure how we afforded the business license, but the business license came, and then our first book came shortly after. And then the nonprofit status came a couple months after that. And so it was really kind of just this positive effect of things just turning on into one thing and another. And it's so funny, because our first event was a community event, a local community event. And all we had was a table and a bucket. And it was me and my friend. And we were just telling people about this idea. We want to start a nonprofit organization. We want to create this representation. We want to do this and this. And we raised money just off of telling people about our ideas. And it was motivating for me, knowing that I have absolutely nothing here, but because the idea of this is getting some momentum, and I know that this can actually turn into something great. And so the reason why it transitioned from not just books and to helping fund people with disabilities was because we took that money that we actually raised and gave it to my best friend so that she could finish paying off her wheelchair. And so I was like, okay, I want to keep doing this. I want to keep being given this opportunity, because like I said, I was able to learn so much from her and what she goes through. And one of those things was the fact that insurance doesn't cover a lot of the medical necessities of people with disabilities. Like they'll cover a wheelchair, but they won't cover an armrest or a headrest. So you'll have half the wheelchair, but you won't have the other half, and you have to raise $5,000 on your own. But that's, there's no reason
so
why
insane. Yeah. So insane. Yeah.
It's so like, even like down to screws, sometimes they'll cover screws, but they won't cover another screw. It's,
oh my
it's,
gosh.
It's crazy. And so I wanted to have all that awareness. And so business, the book, and then the nonprofit is how it went.
Yeah. And really, you know, like you said, you started out with the idea and just getting that out there and then figuring it out as you go along.
Yes.
And getting whatever money you had together and then growing from there. And, you know, sometimes I think that's the hardest step is really, you're like, all right, I have this idea, but I don't really know where to go with it. So it just kind of like stays,
stagnant.
Stagnant. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It stays stagnant, but I feel like people live with that every day. Like so many people have all these brilliant ideas in their mind that aren't going anywhere.
Yes.
But sometimes all it takes is, like you said, just getting out there, meeting somebody, maybe you're talking to somebody about this idea you have, you never know what connections you're going to find. Yep. And then you grow from there and maybe they just have an idea or a piece of advice for you. And then you never know where it will lead next. So really just get on it. You know, that's what we got to do in this world.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I encourage people to do. Just take that step, take that risk. I mean, I feel like I'm the biggest, one of the biggest testimonies to encouraging people that, because I was 17 and in high school, like, and during my senior year, like, the three biggest things going against me per se, or the three hardest things to actually start something. And, you know, I did it anyway. And so I can only hope that's an encouragement for people to not use their job as an excuse to do not to do something, or their current situation not to do something. The time is now, because you're working against the clock. So
totally. Did you get any flack for being so young when you were starting out? Yeah. Like, how did you handle that? If you walked into maybe a business meeting or whatever, and they're like, all right, you're in high school. Like, okay, bye. You know, how did you handle that?
So I still get slack now.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you're 22. I mean,
but I think because we've had all these years of experience now, I mean, it'll be 5 years in July. And so that having that experience under my belt helps a little bit, but there's still that pushback. But oh my gosh, starting out, it was kind of like, the biggest thing was people were suggesting so many different things of like, oh, you can do this. Oh, you can do that. And it was done in a good heart, but for me, it was like, what I have here isn't what you see is good enough almost. Like,
okay,
you want me to go left and you want me to go right, but I'm presenting this and this is what we'd like to do. And it wasn't like, yes, let's get behind this. It was like, well, you could do this. And so I felt like my age gave me this kind of suggestive presence for people to suggest, because I was so impressionable. And like I said, it was done in a good heart, but I feel like if I was treated less as like some sort of suggestion of where to and what to do. And I think a lot of people see that now when they get advice from other people. But yeah, walking into business meetings or giving speeches or trying to call and have a partnership with other businesses, it was, even within my own family, sometimes it was like, they didn't see the legitimacy behind it. So it was tough for sure. And even with my friends, you know, being 17, I, you know, had a bunch of peers and they didn't understand, and I don't really fault them for it, because, you know, I probably wouldn't have understood if I didn't have the mindset that I had. But it wasn't generally accepted by my teachers or my peers, just because, again, I was 17 in high school and back in 2018, and still now almost, I think we've started to get away from the idea of the way it works is you go to school, then you go to college, and then you find a job. But that was a huge mindset back in 2018 of this is how it works. And because I wasn't going down that path, again, I think it was still a lot of pushback from that. But I was also very lucky to have this networking organization that I belong to, where it's called SNJ Millennials. And it's a bunch of young people that have who are in entrepreneurship and have businesses and are young. And so I had that space to be able to reach out to and to be able to lean on and feel that legitimacy when I walked into the room and have that networking opportunity. But other than that, it was definitely, I remember one time there was like a comment on Facebook, like, who let this teenager fundraise? And I was like,
oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, people will comment anything just because that's what they're doing with their day. Yes. They're sitting there commenting. So you just got to ignore it. But even though it hurts sometimes, you're like, all right, like, I'm trying my best out here.
Exactly. No, for sure. So I think in my community, it was it was praise some, and then, and the others, it was kind of just like, what's kind of going on here? Or maybe it'll eventually fizzle out. A lot of the questions that I got when I was younger was, oh, you're doing the nonprofit. Okay. What else? Like, it was always, okay, you've got this going on. What else do you have going on? And I always thought that was funny, but what was really cool out of everything that the tabloids and the media loved having that tagline of teenager starts nonprofit organization.
Of course. Yes.
So they ate that up. And so it felt good that even though I was having that push down and that look down and that almost belittlement a little bit from certain areas, it was great to have that empowerment from other writers and journalists that wanted to uplift the idea. So I think that definitely kept me going and kind of also really, really helped me show that legitimacy to those people that were kind of like, what's going on here? So,
yeah. Well, you know, they always say, you know, if you're doing something noteworthy, that means that people are going to be judging it. Totally. Yeah. You're going to have haters. So that just means keep going. You're doing something right.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good for you. That's amazing. And then I wanted to get into how you really, you know, get the one research and two, the story for each story that you write. So whichever one you want to talk about. I know Savvy Sammy did it just release or it's about to release? Oh my goodness. It's just released. Yes. I'm sorry. But it just released. Yeah. And so exciting, by the way, it's your fifth book. Yes. So for this one, you know, first of all, how did you find Sammy? And then how did you really go about learning about this disability and then incorporating it into the story and, you know, all of that?
Yeah. So I like, because I have my best friend with spinal muscular atrophy, I've always kind of just been very knowledgeable in that field. I know a lot of people are like, you know, you have to go get a degree to learn X, Y, Z, but there's nothing more that you can learn from experience. Like, I think
sure, that's, of course.
And I would ask a lot of questions with her as well. And so with Sammy, that's kind of what I did as well. That's what I did with all of the books, really. I would ask them about certain questions, about what they like, what they don't like, sensitivities, things they can't do, things that they like to do, things that they don't want to do, all those certain important questions to have that relatable product. But with Sammy, I think we worked the most with her out of all of our five books. And like, it's our fifth year, our fifth book. So it's really, really cool. I think I love that those two things go together. But I met Sammy because we were having a fashion show event in the year of 2021. And Sammy has a clothing line that has like disability taglines. And I think they're so cool. Like, one of them is like, normal is a myth. And I just love sayings and phrases like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like another one that says, I'm held together by pins and screws. Like, they're so cute.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to have that for our kids in the fashion show. And so I reached out and said, you know, hey, can we have a couple of t-shirts to sport in our show? Or do you guys have like custom shirts that we can have? Just trying to partner with them. Never in a million, because I saw her status, you know, being a Netflix actor and all the things that she does. I didn't think that she was going to respond back, but the openness and the welcoming attitude from her family and her, it was amazing. And it's not really what you get from people nowadays. I feel like, you know, people are very set in their ways of what they want and who they want to talk to. And right, for her, right, it was just like, yeah, you guys can do this, you can do that, we can even be a part of your show. Like, they were making suggestions. And so through that fashion show and through that event, that's how I really got to know Sammy. And then eventually we were like, we're making a fifth book and we would love to base it off of Sammy. And she was like, absolutely, yes. And so we worked on the book for 2 years, like a year and a half, 2 years. She actually is based in San Antonio, Texas. So we flew out there. We got to meet her and do a photo shoot with her. But I worked with her and her dad a lot. Like, we would do Zoom calls, texting a lot. They were incorporated in our script. They really got to make the book their own, like even down to like things that people wouldn't view as really important. But her sidekick is her actual pet gecko, Zeke. So we were able to incorporate that.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. She's homeschooled. So we had a portion of that in in the book. And in the end, we actually incorporated like a little sneak peek of her family at the aquarium. So kind of like how Disney does, where they'll hide like the next character or like have one of those like cool
Easter eggs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we did that in actually almost all of our books, where we'll kind of hint to the next character or incorporate something about other characters. So yeah, so that's really how we made Savvy Sammy, and it's a complete success. We cannot wait to continue to move forward with it. We just started a book tour as well. So we'll be doing book tours in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. So a lot of exciting things with that book. But Sammy and I worked on that and really made that. She's an animal lover, which is why it's based on an aquarium, because she wants to be a zoologist when she grows up. So we really just base this around her personality.
Oh, that's amazing. And what's her full name? Sammy?
Sammy Haney.
Haney, yes. I was looking her up too. I'm like, she is so fun. I love it.
Yes. She's just everything. And I forgot to mention, with her disability, I had actually already known about brittle bones disease because of a mini docuseries I had watched on it. So I was really familiar with it. And then her website that she has, disabilityshirts.com, they have a whole section on osteogenesis imperfecta. So I kind of just deep dived into the articles and the videos that they had. And I think Sammy just really talked to me about it too, like about the different bones that she breaks, and her mom, about her mom's the first one and always the one to wrap up her injury. So we actually incorporated that into her superpower. So she's like, it's a really, really cool book and a really fun book. But that's how I learned a lot about her disability, through her and the articles that she had on her website.
Oh, that's really beautiful and special. And, you know, I'm sure throughout the years, you've gotten some feedback from people who have read it and kids who have related to it. And what has that really been like for you?
I think the coolest part is when someone is like, oh, I got to share this book with so-and-so. And they'll get back to me like, oh my gosh, I went to go and send it and they already have the book. And I love that. And I think that's so cool. And for me, it's not just for kids with disabilities. We're about inclusion. And like you said before, it's not an other than, like, it's everyone. Like, everyone should be getting these books in their home, whether they're able-bodied or disabled. Education and normalizing is the only way that we're going to make any headway with making this not something that's pointed out or different. And so for me, just being able to hear that people have these books in their homes, and that we're able to have this worldwide reach, it's been really incredible. And I just know that this is just the start of being able to have that real representation and raising that representation statistic, because that's really all we're about, raising that very low. It's 2.1%. That was the statistic in 2019. So it's probably a little bit higher now. But that is still such a low number for disability representation in the entertainment industry. So it's really cool. And not only just for me, but for the kids, like having that, you know, oh, I'm Zappy Zane, or oh, I'm Savvy Sammy, and I'm actually a superhero. People are actually looking for autographs from me and are looking at me. So I think even for their aspect, it's even cooler than it feels for me to be an author, because we're turning them into a superhero.
Yeah, like a real life superhero. That's amazing. And yeah, as you were saying that, how this is meant for everybody, it made me think, so not like I have a peanut allergy. So I remember growing up, like there were books about kids with peanut allergies that my mom would bring home, and it made me feel like so happy, because I'm like, oh my God, like this is about me, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, along the lines of what you're saying, but I wish, and maybe this is the case, but I wish that was something that like every kid had in their home, because then they could know what it is like. And thinking about it, you know, now, like eventually down the road when I have kids, like to have a book or books in your home that represent all types of kids out there with all different types of life experiences. And, you know, that's how they're going to learn. And when they see it from their own kid's book point of view, you know, it's going to normalize it so early on and make it just a part of life. Like we're all a little different. We all have our things and we can all still be there for each other.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause bullying is such a big thing in elementary schools and high schools and things like that. I mean, it's a huge thing everywhere, but even more so in the school. Mm-hmm. So if we have this normalization early on, like you said, we're going to have a lot less bullying and a lot less nitpicking. And it's funny that you said that you have a peanut allergy. My sister has a peanut allergy too, but it's really severe.
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
And so growing up with my sister, seeing how people reacted when, you know, oh, she has a peanut allergy, and oh, us going to the restaurant and making sure that they're not cooking peanut oil, and mm-hmm. kind of just like, you know, not everyone is very like, I don't know what the word is. They're not very kind when you have to, no. you know, say something like that. And so I think it's a, you know, like I said, it's a great idea to have other people, you know, just read about it and just know about like, okay, this is a very serious thing and we need to take this serious, cross-contamination, checking the labels. So it does wonders when we actually make these issues less of an issue for other people who don't yes. have, who don't have it.
Yeah.
So I can relate to that as well.
Oh, yeah, girl. I'm like, you get it. Yeah. But yeah, really it's, you know, what I've learned from that, especially in my experiences along, you know, very much along the same lines of what you and your sister have seen, mm-hmm. really it's taught me you just need to take an extra second to care about yeah. what a person is saying. Yes. And maybe it's annoying for you to do something that caters to one person and not to you, but yes. it's a big deal and it can be right. the matter of life or death in some exactly. circumstances. And I'm like, no matter what it is, just take a second to listen right. and like help a person out. It's really not that hard.
Because they would expect the same in return.
Yes. So. That's it. Oh, girl. Oh, that made me happy. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, it's just like restaurant workers are usually like the number one, or like a peanut allergy. Like it's yeah. usually like that one, like that face that we get mm-hmm. every single time. It's like, yeah.
Right. Or they're like, oh, so they're like, are you gluten free? I'm like, no, it's not the same.
Yeah. Can you have this or this? And it's like peanut allergy.
I know. The one thing this, like, oh, then we'll move on. But the one thing that like I will never forget is I told somebody like in a restaurant, I'm like, oh, I'm allergic to peanuts. Or like peanut butter or just peanuts? I'm like, same thing, really same thing. But and I was like, you did not just ask me that. But you know, people are
so funny.
It's really funny. It is funny. You have to laugh.
Yeah.
And cry at the same time. But yeah, it's yeah.
It's at this point, we've lived it for 22, 18, yes. mm-hmm. however long years. It's like, yeah, sometimes yeah. just laugh.
You have to. Yeah. And I think anybody who deals with any type of disability or allergy, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. you know, it's good to have a little humor about it.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think I'm sure you've seen that from the people you've worked with as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad. And then you have also, like you alluded to before, you said, you know, you've dealt with some media and tabloids, and like your story has been featured on the Today Show and Forbes and like big time names, girl. So that's amazing. And I want to know like a little bit more about those experiences and what are yeah. some takeaways from that?
I'm not even really sure how I got picked up from those tabloids, because I've been and posting and like sharing about like what's going on. And actually starting out, I would kind of send press releases to everybody and anybody. Mm-hmm. And I would almost be annoying. And I know it's annoying for journalists and writers, but one journalist who gave me advice, she was a 6ABC anchor. She was like, you kind of have to be annoying a little bit, because they're going to forget. They're not going to prioritize. They have so many stories that they need to write. So if you're kind of getting in their eye like over and over again, obviously to a respectful point, but
right.
but making sure that they don't forget about you. And so I was on a couple of local publications, and I think I just got picked up. I remember Forbes reached out to me off of an Instagram DM. So wow. it was really cool. And so I never, ever turned down a media opportunity, whether it's big, small, because it always leads to something. I want to say it was NJ.com that I was on that Forbes saw on Instagram and then reached out to me that way. And I tell everyone, connections and experience will get you farther than anything else. It's like, oh, I saw you here, or I heard about you here, and that's how I found you here. And so,
yes.
Forbes got in contact. And then another woman, who was a journalist for, I guess, I don't know if she's a freelancer or how that was, but, she was able to get me on Upworthy and the Today Show. And I feel like there was another one that she was able to get me on. But it was an incredible experience. Especially the Forbes one, like I said, it really helps people understand that this is something that I'm serious about, and that this is something that I take seriously. Mm-hmm. And so it really helped me flourish, and really helped the nonprofit flourish to have that type of coverage and that representation that we've been trying to get.
Yes.
So it was an incredible experience. And then I think I want to say, not, and I'm just thinking of how I got connected with that Forbes article. I believe it was either Forbes or the Today Show got me connected to Colgate, and Colgate actually wound up sponsoring us. And so, like, Colgate's now one of our sponsors. Yeah. So
look at that.
Yeah. Everything led to another thing. And so I'm utterly grateful to be able to have such success with the media and just where I've been able to get at today at such a young age, because it truly could have went the opposite way. I could have been fighting for my life over here with the nonprofit.
Yeah.
But instead it was gravitated to in such a positive way from media. And what, you know, whether it was a great tagline, you know, teenager starts a nonprofit, for me, it was really everything. So I'm definitely grateful for those experiences.
Yeah. And I think it really goes off of what you said. You know, you were the one putting your name out there. You said you were sending press releases to anybody you could.
Yeah.
And that's what really makes a difference. And for anything like applying to jobs or starting your business, whatever, you know, you have to be the one to put yourself out there, and don't leave it to anybody else. Don't, you know, obviously you could throw some Instagram posts up there, see what happens. Things can happen from that, but going the extra mile in any way you can. And it's taken you a long way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I also wanted to talk to you about, because you are a young girl and you're doing your thing, you're living your life, like having fun, I'm sure, and exploring all the parts of life that there are to explore while you are this very successful young professional at the same time. So balancing those two things really interests me, because it's tough. And I'm sure you feel pressure to have this professional image, but you also just want to be 22 years old and like do what you want. And
speaking, you know, to my part right now.
So from your perspective, and there's no need to like be on a pedestal about this. Like, first of all, what is that like for you? And how do you really view it at this point in time?
So it's so funny. This topic has been probably like my biggest thing, like my biggest life season that I'm in right now, of trying to figure out how I can manage both. Because at first I was not the type of person to really go out much at all. I kind of grew up in a sheltered lifestyle, so I'd never really had these like crazy desires to go out partying and clubbing. But as I got older, I definitely did want to experience those things because I saw the rest of my friends doing that. And I didn't want to stop myself from having those experiences. So in the beginning, I didn't do anything because I felt as though like, that's just not who I should be or what I should experience. And it's going to ruin everything if I even try to do anything like that. But then there was like a piece of me that felt like I wasn't really living all the way. Like I was business all the time. And I didn't want that to ruin later on being in my 30s and my 40s and thinking, oh my gosh, I missed these opportunities to go out and be in my 20s.
Right.
And so that mindset shifted for me where I was like, okay, I need to find a balance between having an outside life outside of the business and having the business.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. I want to stop my dog from barking for a second.
Very good.
He wants to bark at a bark bird that's like, my roof right now.
So. They always do.
Yes. He's like literally about to jump out of my window for it.
Aw, cute puppy.
Leave it. And so now I've been able to find a very balanced lifestyle, but in the beginning it was like, how do I obtain my composure while I'm out in these more relaxed environments? And so I'm still very strict about who's recording me or who I'm out with. I think that's like two like very important things for me, and where I'm at. I'm always very mindful of where I'm at and who I surround myself with, but I also have a healthy balance of where, okay, I'm going out. And I was even closed off to friends really, because it was so hard for me to find motivated teenagers and 20-year-olds that not even had to have a business or anything like that, but were motivated to really just do something other than just kind of figure life out. And I'm all for that too, but I wanted to make sure I was surrounded by people that could encourage me or support me in the way that I could be fed. And so, like I said, it was an uphill battle for a while, trying to figure out how to, they're just two different worlds, being business professional and being a 22-year-old, there's two totally different things. And so I feel as though the way I've maintained that the most is making sure that my image, especially on social media, is a certain way, and is completely professional, as professional as it can be, while still having my personality mixed into it. So mm-hmm. I still feel like that was taken away from me, because I know this is also a lifestyle that I signed up for. And so I've been able to, you know, have these friends and spaces to be able to do both. And in the beginning, I remember being so strict, because I, like I said, I wasn't really able to like live. Like, I was just had this business mentality all the time. And I can tell you, it's great to have that mentality, but it's also great to go and explore life the way it's meant to be explored.
Absolutely. And
so, I just remember like one time I had alcohol in my hand and someone was like recording around me, and I was like, please delete that video. Like, I didn't even know I was the appropriate age to have alcohol. I just didn't even want it, like, you know, associated with me, because I was just so scared that I was going to be judged because I was already young. And I didn't want to have that mentality when someone saw my business page or saw me and thought, oh, how am I supposed to take her business seriously if her image isn't taken seriously? Mm-hmm. And so that's what I try to uphold and maintain. And so I've done a lot better with it, and I feel like I'm breathing a lot more. But it was definitely absolutely difficult in the beginning. Two different worlds for sure.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, as you're speaking about that, like, I am kind of on the opposite side of my 20s. Like, I'm 28. So, but I went through that whole thing of having like a public position, but also mm-hmm. being like, I didn't really party in like high school. And like, I was just starting to in college. So now yes. I'm like, all right, like, now's my time to like yeah. be young and have fun. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember going mm-hmm. through the same thing and being very stressed about who was recording and what yeah. Who I was around. And
yes.
It's hard, but then I also know who I am at the end yes. of the day. And exactly. I know that, kind of like we talked about before, if something were to get out and people were to judge it, I also know who I am. And I know that I'm not doing anything that mm-hmm. is going to really affect my image. Like, yes, people can judge, but I know my values that I stick to, and that's fine. I'm sure you're the same way. Like, you're not yeah. out doing anything like crazy out there.
Right.
That's going to actually get you in trouble. If you want right. to have a drink with your friends, yes do it. You're in yeah. your 20s. Like, you're allowed yes. to. You're allowed to go dance and have fun and yes. dress up and look cute and yes. you know, whatever. It's fine. But it is kind of a struggle. But I think the more you are, like, obviously very confident, but you'll continue to come into your own and just know, like, all right, people are going to say whatever they want to say, but yep. I know who I am. And I exactly. think that's a very important thing to learn along the
exactly.
way.
Exactly. No, yeah. for sure. Cause I think with like us being in the public sense, we have like that mentality of wanting to keep up with that, but mm-hmm.
it's impossible.
Yes. It's our life.
Yes.
People say what they want to say. They're going to feel how they want to feel. So at the end of the day, this is, you know, either you accept all of it or you just don't. There's no reason for it. And I find that the criticism is from people who aren't even doing the same things that we're doing. It's like,
always,
how do you have that opinion when you're not even in the same shoes? And that's mm-hmm. not a cocky mentality. It's more like, where is your criteria to be able to say, hey, this doesn't look right to you? So that's, you know, one of the things I also pay attention to. It's like, who is the one judging me? Who is the one that is trying to say, you know, and there's constructive criticism from people. And I always think about, you know, when you want to take advice from somebody, always take advice from people who are where you want to be in life. It's whereas someone that's, you know, coming from a different, totally different perspective, and that'll yeah. kind of give you like the realness that you need. So definitely yes. understand and relate to everything you said was like I said, my life season that I was going through over the past couple of months, like recently.
Yeah. And
I just recently started living is what I said.
Live your life. Truly. Yeah. yeah. Like, be around people who know you and support you and are yeah. going to look out for you. And
exactly.
You know who you are too. And that's exactly. good. And I also just wanted to say quickly, like, everybody who's going to have an opinion on what you do, every opinion is going to be different too.
Yes.
Even if they're professional people, everyone's going to say, you should do this, shouldn't do this, blah, blah, blah. You're the owner of your body and yourself at the end of the
yes.
day. So
yep.
do you. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you are amazing. And
I'm so excited to see what continues to happen with Savvy Sammy and like the rest of the books you continue to write. And I know you speak as well, and you have all these events, and you're just growing this organization day by day. So it's really, really amazing. And I just want to know, like, I know your goal, like you want to continue to increase representation in the media. If there's something in the foreseeable future that you could really see changing, mm-hmm. is there something, and how can we help to get that goal of reality?
I definitely think, like you said, that representation is changing in general. But I think the biggest thing that I also would like to see change and to continue change is accessibility into buildings and events. Like even just like the simple town events or carnivals and things like that, like summertime events, like 80% of the times people with disabilities can't attend them. So yeah. I would like to see more changing with that. And, you know, I would only hope that, you know, it's all these small positive movements that give one big result. And so I, you know, hope to continue to see people be advocates. I think a lot of the times what it takes is people advocating and standing up together in solidarity. And so I think as society and me, you and other people, what we can do to just make that change is to make sure that when we see something, we say something. Mm-hmm. I always say you don't have to relate to care. You know, if there's someone with a disability or anyone really in any other community that's advocating for something that's not right, why can't we share that post? Why can't we comment and say, I understand you, and just be that person, that conversation, to have that person to, you know, lean on or to support. So I think it's a very small ask for people to just come together and unify and support one another, really support one another.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, it could start small. It could be yes. in your town, at your event that you're hosting, at, yes. you know, whatever it is, if you can make a difference in one small area of the world, hopefully yes. that'll just continue. So
exactly, yeah. exactly. Yeah.
Beautiful. Amazing. Well, I have one question that I ask everybody on the show, and that is, what is it that you value at the end of each day?
Oh, wow. That's a good question.
I like it.
like value in my life or just like value in general, or?
Yeah, it could be whatever you want it to be. Honestly, I'd say, you know, in your life.
This might be a little silly, but I value the downtime, like the part where you can just, it was just yes. a great day, but I can relax now. I really like enjoy that the most. I love doing what I do, and I love being on the go, and I love being busy, but those busy times make that part even just incredible. Just getting in my jammies and watching a show and just relaxing and resetting. I really value that.
Yeah. Oh, and that is so important, and we all need yeah. it, especially if we're on the go, like you said, and yes. going after all these goals. Take your time to breathe. Definitely. Yes.
Yep, yes. Exactly.
Well, Trinity, thank you so much. I've loved this conversation, and great. You are amazing, and I can't wait to continue to see what you do. Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you so yeah. much for having me and having this opportunity and just helping me build my platform and reaching more people.
Oh yeah. You'll keep doing it. If people yeah. want to connect with you or find your books, where can they do so?
They can go to wecan2wecan.org, and there's a link to absolutely everything, to books, to donating, to our social media platforms, and they'll even lead you to mine. So if you want to follow mine too, it's Trinity Jagdeo, but wecan2wecan.org is the website that I point everyone to go to, because it's like the one-stop shop to everything.
Amazing. Perfect. Awesome.
Yay. Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much.
We're amazing. Thank you so much, truly.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Kylie. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Trinity. Have a good rest of your night, okay?
Bye, you too.
Bye, thanks.